Welcome to the Friar Phil Show. Yeah, it's just another day with the Padres losing. Just experienced that adventure with Blake Snell pitching. We'll get into that in a little bit. First, I want to mention something that I forget to mention quite often on the program. If you go to the main page of the podcast, you'll see a button that says support. Now, I give you a choice of 99 cents, $5, or $10. Yeah, it's $9.99, but it's like $10. So if you are so inclined and you like the program, I invite you to go press that button and subscribe. Okay, we've got two guys out of three from the podcast called Friar Talk. If you haven't heard it, shame on you, because these guys are really, really good. I have on the phone with me Matt and Isaac. Hi, guys.
How's it going?
It's going. It wasn't going too good for Blake Snell, though, today, huh?
That was rough. He was all over the place. It kind of looked like Blake Snell to begin last year.
Yeah, those were the kind of vibes I got, too. But, I mean, I don't know. I think it's just his first start. Hopefully it all pans out for him. He was wild today. He was kind of having some difficulty locating all of his pitches, really. But it's similar to the Blake Snell we saw last year, who would leave four innings with 90 pitches. But I do think he'll improve.
I hope so. I hope so. My heart can't take it anymore. All right, so why don't you guys, let's start off with you all telling us about Friar Talk, how that came to be, and a little bit about yourselves.
Yeah, so Friar Talk, Chase isn't here, but Chase actually was the one that kind of started the idea for the show. So we started, I want to say, like a week before the 2020 season, the COVID season. And actually kind of funny is, so me, Chase, and Isaac all went to high school together, but we both kind of knew Chase separately. But we've been doing the show now for a couple of years, record a few times a week, and now I've all become real good friends around it. So it's been super fun. So I'm currently living in New York, and Isaac's the guy in San Diego, you know, going to all the games. Lucky enough to be able to do that.
Yeah, I've definitely been having a lot of fun doing so. Really out here, it's kind of a culture shock compared to where we're from. We're from the Coachella Valley, and a lot of Dodger fans out there, and coming out here, it's refreshing to see how much brown and yellow really is out here, especially in North County. There's a lot of brown and yellow. It's very exciting to see. It's kind of a whole different culture out here. It's super fun. But yeah, it basically all just started with a message and started a podcast, and it's been really fun ever since. We love recording and love giving out some prior information.
That sounds great. And you all knew each other in high school, huh?
Yeah.
And then did you grow up here, or did you grow up in New York where Matt is currently?
So
we're all from the Coachella Valley. It's about 2 hours away from San Diego. It's where like Palm Springs and Indio is, but I was born here in San Diego in North County, and I lived here for 7 or 8 years, and then I moved out there to the Coachella Valley.
Well, I'm originally from New York. You can tell by the accent.
Well, definitely.
Go ahead, Matt. Sorry I stepped on you.
Oh, no, no worries at all. I was just going to say I was actually also born in San Diego, and my dad's a firefighter out there. So he lives out there, so growing up I would kind of go back and forth, but mostly grew up in the Coachella Valley, and then now I'm out in New York. So where you're from, so we swap places.
Yeah, small places, and I moved on to bigger places, and I'm happy here in San Diego. It's gorgeous. We pay for the weather, of course, but we have one of the most beautiful ballparks, I think, in the major leagues here with Petco Park, and I have fun going there as well. Okay, let's go in order, and we'll start with your podcast from today, talking about Kim, and what should happen with him when Tatis comes back? I don't want you guys to redo your podcast, but just give us a general idea about what you were talking about.
Right, right, right. So,
oh my, they're breaking up. it's not a Friar Phil show without technical difficulties. I think one at a time has to talk and maybe it won't break up.
Yeah, here. I think Isaac's cutting out a little bit. I could talk about what we talked about in the episode. So basically our big question was, you know, what to do when with Ha-Seong Kim when Fernando comes back. And I think right now it's a pretty tough thing to answer, just because right now, basically, out of the guys in the infield, you have Cronenworth, who's definitely slumped a lot, but has been a guy that you would fully expect to start at second base. And you have Voit, who is supposed to be the DH, and he has really, really struggled early on. So our thought was, like, if Fernando came back right now, you would probably want to move Haas to DH, move to first, and move Kim to second. That doesn't mean that Voit doesn't play, but it just means that's like kind of your primary lineup. But I think ultimately, if none of those guys are traded, there's going to be some, like, have to be some type of rotation where Kim's getting significantly more playing time than last year. And, you know, we still have about a month or so until Fernando's back to have to make that decision, hopefully less, but I think it's just going to be some type of combination where it's really more matchup dependent, which is definitely a great thing, because that's a big advantage for the Padres if they can actually, you know, adjust their lineup depending on who's throwing out there than having a fully set infield every single day.
Oh, absolutely. And I like the way they adjusted with the pitching as well. Yesterday using Clevinger for about five innings, and then having Mackenzie Gore come in and closing the door on the Phillies. And Martinez today came in after Snell got tired, I guess, or they pulled him or whatever. And he did a fairly good job, too. We just didn't get any offense going. But as far as Kim is concerned, I agree with you. And I think he's earned the playing time. He's made some fantastic plays at shortstop while he's been covering for Fernando Tatis, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and he's a fantastic fielder. Last year when Fernando went down with a shoulder injury earlier in the year and he had played roughly half the games, he was one of the MLB leaders in defensive WAR. So his defensive value, maybe it wasn't defensive more, maybe it was outside of average, but it was one of the main defensive stats, and it was basically he was atop the list just because of all the high profile and, you know, fantastic plays that he had made. So he's been amazing from a defensive standpoint, and, you know, you look at the improvements based on last year's numbers compared to this year's, and we do have to take into account that, you know, he has a significantly less at bats right now. But you see it. Like, you see the performance. You see that he looks better. He's hitting the baseball harder. He looks like he's not getting gassed by high 90s fastballs as much anymore. He just looks a lot better. And they were definitely question marks for him coming into this year. So I think that in terms of, like, any guy that's really broken out of the Padres, he's done it in the biggest way.
Oh, I think so.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Sounds good. So what I was trying to say was, and it's actually really funny that Juan Soto got brought up today, not saying it's going to happen, not saying anything's going to happen with Juan Soto. As Padres fans, we know how this goes. I don't think we're going to get Juan Soto, but I had mentioned in our video that I do think that one of Crone, Kim, or CJ Abrams could be traded, because there's too many good guys that can only play one position. Abrams can play outfield, but he's been taking a lot of infield reps. He hasn't gotten any outfield reps down in the minors. And I'm not saying I want either of them to get traded. I love all of them. I think they're all great players, and I would love to have them in a Padres uniform for the foreseeable future. Though, with the outfield the way it is right now, there's a lot of weaknesses out there. And if it nets you a good outfielder, then I definitely think the Padres could explore that. But with the current shape of the roster, I agree with Matt. We all think that Hosmer could get shifted to the DH, and I think that'd be best for the lineup.
Yeah, I think so, too. You were right about the pitching rotation the other day in another podcast I was listening to. You said that they would do exactly what they did yesterday and today, Isaac. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. I've been banging the table for that one for a while. I mean, I've been wanting to do it. And, I mean, when you have the pitching resources the way they have it right now, you absolutely got to bank on it. You got to take advantage of all of them. You can never have too much starting pitching.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I like the way Gore came in, and he just was concerned with getting outs. He wasn't concerned that, well, I'm not starting, so I'm doing this and piggybacking and letting that mess with his mind. He just went out there and pitched like he was starting the game, and it was very effective, and it worked really good, the combination of him and Clevinger. And today, with Snell and Martinez, that worked out well, too. And it's good that we're keeping these guys around, because you never know what's going to happen. You know, baseball comes with injuries. And it's just great that we have these extra guys and we have the rotation that we have now. It's really outstanding. And it's befuddled many a team so far this season.
Right. So, I mean, it's super important to get balls on the game. And with Mackenzie Gore and Nick Martinez, I just think they're starting again here. So, they've been playing 30 games in the next 40 days, so that's a lot of games within 40 days. At least Gore or Martinez to get a start. So right now, it's just a matter of the arms. We get their innings, and we're doing it the most, you know, the way we can utilize them the best right now. Yesterday with Mike Clevinger and Mackenzie Gore, that was some of the best pitching I've seen in a long time. It was really a clinic, so that was really good out of them. So really the only one that struggled was Blake Snell. But like I said earlier, his first start back, and I think he's going to find his groove here soon. And of course, I mean, not really of course, but Nick Martinez was like out today. A lot of props to Nick Martinez for sure.
And speaking of pitchers, you guys talked about Joe Musgrove and whether or not the Padres will be able to afford him. Would one of you like to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I could get into a little bit. So we were kind of responding to we talked about it. I think it was Monday. I want to say Monday or Sunday. We recorded about that, and we were responding to a Kevin AC comment that basically said like, he doesn't know if they're going to be able to afford them. And I don't think he was trying to, like, make it into a big deal or anything, but I think it was more of just, like, him saying, hey, maybe they were hoping to get Joe Musgrove at a lower price, and now he's kind of pricing himself out with how well he's playing. And it's definitely concerning, because you look at where the starting pitching's at, and there's five guys that are going to be free agents in the next two seasons. So if you're going to take all that money that you're, one, you're freeing up from those guys, but also you're freeing up from Myers and Hosmer's deal falling, like going down in AAB, and you're going to put that all in one starting pitcher, well, you only have Nick Martinez and Mackenzie Gore still on the roster after that year. And, you know, guys like Ryan Weathers and Robert Gasser in the minor leagues, who Ryan Weathers is struggling a lot, and Robert Gasser is still a very young player. So there's a lot of question marks, and the big thing that we were talking about is it going to come down to where you can get Manaea and Clev for the same price that you get Musgrove? Because it might be hard for them to look at that, even if they really want to bring Musgrove back, and actually make that decision of, okay, we're gonna do it. We're going to go for one of those guys instead of two of them. So I think it's tough. I think it really depends on also who's available in terms of outfielders as well, but I think it's tough, and I do think they kind of shot themselves in the foot with not extending him this offseason, and they were tight with money, so I think that's why they probably didn't. But it feels like he's already earned himself $15 million, with $15 to $20 million in the total deal in these first few, I would say, like in the first month or so, and also with some of the extensions that we've seen later on in the offseason, where if they would have extended him in the fall, they could have got him for maybe like 5 years, $80 million, or 5 years, $85 million. And I feel like right now the conversations are probably going to start at 5 years and $100 million. So that's a significant climb early on this season.
Oh, it is. And he, like you said, he did earn this, you know, the first Padre pitcher to give us a no-hitter. A Padre pitcher that he's undefeated now, isn't he?
Yep.
So I like that guy a lot, and I just hope they'll find a way to keep him here, because it's great for the team. It's like a Tony Gwynn moment. You know, guy from San Diego, went to Grossmont High School, which is a little bit east of San Diego, for those of you who are not here in town. Yeah, just the whole package of Musgrove, I like. You guys were also talking about Mackenzie Gore and what should happen with him. Now, we know Isaac was talking about piggybacking him, which they did, but did you have any other ideas about what you should do with him?
I think right now he's in the perfect role. When Clevenger is able to extend his innings from 4 or 5 to, you know, hopefully 6 or 7, the way we know Clevenger can, and I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. I really do think it's going to take till the end of June, early July for that to happen. When that happens, Gore, I mean, the way he's pitching right now, it's very hard to argue to send him down, because not all of his pitches are great, but his fastball ranks as one of the best pitches in baseball right now. And when he finds his stuff, he's really going to be even better than he is right now. His stuff isn't the best it could be. So when he finds that, we could see him be a number 3, number 4 kind of guy. But as of right now, you got to keep him in that piggyback role, help Clevenger out, because, you know, coming off his second Tommy John, you want to limit him to 80, 85 pitches a game and have Gore shut out the rest. And I really love Gore's mentality of, you know, just because I'm not starting doesn't mean I can't produce, because, I mean, a lot of pitchers have a tough time going from a starter to a reliever, and Mackenzie Gore in his first outing did not have a tough time at all. He succeeded in that role, and he fulfilled it to the best of his abilities, really. So in the future, I mean, like I said, I do see him starting another game or multiple games here soon. Injuries happen. Some guys just can't last the whole season, and he's going to start again soon. But as of right now, this piggyback role is great, and in the future, we're going to see him start again. And, I mean, if we're able to make it September, October, you're going to see him have that Julio Urias role that Julio Urias had in 2020, the postseason.
Yeah, I got to totally agree with you with that. The other thing I wanted to bring up was the signing of Robinson Cano. Last week, I was in the hospital enjoying pneumonia, so I was not really paying attention to too much with what was happening with the Padres, but that caught my eye. And on my pain medicine and antibiotics, I wondered why to get a bat in there. But I just want to hear your thoughts on the signing of Robinson Cano from the Mets.
I think that's exactly what our immediate tweet was to the statement. I think we tweeted why, like, this is like with like 10 question marks, like, this doesn't make any sense. Isaac, you were a little bit more on it, like, not like super upset about it or anything. I would say I'm upset about it. I was just kind of confused. But then you learn that, you know, he's good friends with Fernando, basically, and like a lot of these guys, it seems like they kind of see him as a mentor, or maybe not a mentor, but just kind of a leader, a veteran leader, which I think can get overrated with a lot of signings. But it's the last roster spot. I think that if he doesn't play well early on, they'll just release him. I just would have rather seen a guy in the minors get called up that's been playing well. So I don't know. I would have rather went for the younger route. See, you know, Iggy Rosario is a guy that could potentially be moved up. Now he is struggling. I don't know why I'm blanking on this other dude's name. Isaac, what's the guy in Double A that's been so good? Middle infielder. Oh, Ruiz. Yes. So Esther Ruiz has been hitting like over 300. He's put up great offensive numbers in double. You know, why not bring him down or up to get a few reps, even if it's only for a couple weeks. I think that goes a long way into developing guys. And, you know, likely this guy, you know, you bring up Esther Ruiz, who's been succeeding in a double A level. He might not look that great, but if he gets a couple weeks and he goes and sees some major league pitching, even if it's 20 at bats, I think that helps a lot. And then you send him back down. I don't know. I just think that's a better way to do it. I feel like the Padres haven't been able to play their young guys, but at the end of the day, hopefully he potentially brings a solid bat to this lineup, because yesterday he had two hits. So it's early on. I hope it works out, but I was just kind of confused by it. It just seemed kind of random at the time.
I guess for offense, you know, that's the only reason I can see them getting a Robinson Cano, so there's a bat that actually works for the Padres. We're still having a little bit of trouble with offense and hitting good pitching, and that's concerning to me, you know, especially if we make it to the postseason and we stay on the tail of the Dodgers. You know, not only do we need good defense and good pitching, but you got to score some runs to win a game. And it's like today, Wheeler shut them out completely. And I noticed, not so much this year, but in past years with the Padres, one of my pet peeves about it was when they were behind in the game, everybody would come up and they'd be swinging, so they'd hit themselves in the ass with the bat because they were swinging for home runs to get the big hit, to get that, instead of playing timely hit baseball, you know, a good basic baseball, small ball,
right?
And I wonder what you guys think about that.
I think the Red Sox are playing to affect the home runs. They're not very high. Basically, what they're just doing is they're getting guys on base, and they have some timely hitting going on, especially from guys like Eric Hosmer. And I mean, I know that's a surprise, but Eric Hosmer and Manny Machado are both being the driving forces of this offense. So to an extent right now, they are playing small ball, whereas the past 2 years, especially in 2020, they were very reliant on the long ball. And I think that was kind of the theme throughout baseball. I think you're starting to see that all throughout baseball more and more, where a lot of guys are starting to strike out more and more. And I mean, I love Fernando. That's basically what Fernando is. He strikes out a lot, but he also hits 45-plus homers, so that's okay. That is basically the theme of baseball right now, but that's not the theme of the Padres. As we know right now, the Padres, they rank very high in runs, but very low in home runs and the percentage. So basically what you want is happening right now. It's very good to be, because they're playing small ball, playing to the best, so they're strongest abilities, you know, and the pitching's coming through the way we've been hoping it would.
And moving from starting pitching to the bullpen, one of your questions on one of your podcasts said, how concerned should we be about the Padres' bullpen? Well, how concerned should we be?
I think with the current group of guys, we can be pretty concerned. But if guys like Jose Castillo, Adrian Morejon, Drew Pomeranz, if those guys are able to return, I think you look at this bullpen and it's way better. I also think that now adding Nick Martinez and Mackenzie Gore as not openers, but like the secondary pitchers, I think it helps a lot. So I think the bullpen's getting better with those two guys in there. And I think when guys start returning from injury, that'll be like that kind of second wave. But right now, the guys that have been thrown out there have not succeeded. We saw that a lot with, unfortunately, two guys that we definitely liked a lot and have been huge fans of the past couple of years, and Tim Hill and Denelson Lamet. But it seems like Tim Hill's injured and Lamet kind of lost all his stuff. So we'll see if these guys that are currently injured come back. They're expected to come back early June. We'll have to see how it plays out.
Let's talk a little bit about Trent Grisham. You ask, should Trent Grisham be benched for Jose Azucar? And I've kind of wondered that myself because I'm getting a little frustrated with Grisham. He's certainly a good outfielder, plays great center field, makes some really good catches, but his bat is so cold. And somebody, the pitching coach, or not the pitching coach, the batting coach, somebody needs to figure out what the hell's wrong with him, or he needs to be sent down to figure it out. And, you know, we can't play this game anymore that the Padres used to play with trying to figure out your stuff, you know, while you're up in the major leagues, because that doesn't make for a winning combination. What do you guys think of Trent Grisham currently?
Man, I think he's the toughest part of the right now. It's so hard. You don't want to give up because they're not really good.
Isaac, you're breaking up again. So stand someplace, and once you're standing there, I'll tell you if it's good. Let me explain to everybody. This is the first time I've done a three-way call with any guest, and this is my first time having two people on the phone at once. So I expected some technical difficulties, but let's see if Isaac has found a place in his house or outdoors where he gets better reception.
How about now?
Okay, that's good. Stand there or sit. Don't move. All right, we were talking about Trent Grisham what you think.
Trent Grisham's kind of the toughest player to evaluate right now, just because he had a really good 2020. Of course, it was a shortened season. Then he had a hot start to 2021. And then ever since the back end of 2021, he just hasn't been that same player that we once saw. And it's very tough to evaluate because you don't know what side to take. And I mean, recency bias shows that he's not a very good hitter, and he's a good fielder. He's a great fielder, but your glove can only save you so much when you're not very good at the plate. So, I don't know. I think as of right now, he's kind of lucky that we don't have very good outfield depth, because if we did, then you would probably not see him out there as much. And Azucar did have a good start to the season, but I mean, I haven't seen anything much ever since. So he's lucky right now that he's going to keep getting started just because there's nobody out there.
Will Myers as well. He's not doing too great. One home run so far, you know. Out of him, I expect a little bit more too, but I don't know, you know. I don't know what the answer is, except for trading and signing, you know, in the off season and bolstering that outfield so we have more choices. I feel like we don't have any choice in center field. We don't have any choice in right field. Now, Profar has played pretty good left field. A couple of amazing throws to get people out at the plate. So I'm not too worried about left field, but center and right field concern me, especially, you know, not because of their defense, but because of their offense, but the lack of it.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny. We were pretty concerned about having, I mean, Trent Grisham obviously is a great defensive center fielder, but Will Myers is a meh right fielder. And Jerks and Profar last year, he was bouncing around different spots in the outfield. And Grant, he was playing a lot of center field, but he struggled a lot in the outfield. He did not look good. So early on, the Padres outfield has actually been extremely good defensively, which I wasn't expecting. But offensively, I wasn't expecting much at all to begin with. But they've disappointed in that regard. I mean, you look at right now, none of them are hitting Myers is hitting .232, but he has very, very little slugging, almost no power, under 600 OPS. Profar isn't hitting, he's hitting .190, but he has 5 home runs. He's had some pop, but Profar is just always, I feel like, going to be that up-and-down player. The good thing is he does walk a lot, so at least he gets on base a lot. But the problem is he's not hitting too hot. And then offensively, Grisham has been abysmal. And I saw some people were talking that they feel like he's starting to turn a corner because he's been hitting the ball harder the last weeks. I mean, in the last 15 games, he's hitting 170. In the last 7 games, he's hitting 140. So his numbers aren't up. He has barreled a lot, like quite a few more baseballs lately. So hopefully that's a sign of, you know, positive regression. But it's just been tough because he's looked, his numbers are awful over the past 600 plate appearances.
Terrible, terrible if you look at him. And, you know, you don't expect that from a major league player, you know. And if they have that kind of problem like he has, then they should send him down. Bring up somebody else that you have down there. Some of the younger kids that perhaps are good at playing center field. Bring them up. See what happens, you know. We've been surprised a couple of times when they've brought up the young kids from the minor leagues. Bring them up. Maybe their bats will work. Because the lack of offense really, really does concern me. And it's going to concern me even more when we get closer to the postseason. I left them speechless, didn't I? Isaac's breaking up again. That's why he was trying to talk. But seriously, you know, I'm worried about that. And we can win games, you know, obviously with scoring one run like we did yesterday. Well, we had 3 runs, but we only needed 1. But it's got to be better if you're going to be a championship team and want to win the World Series. You got to have offense.
Yeah, I think we might see them trade for someone. I mean, not really might. I think you kind of have to trade for someone. The guy that we talked about was Benintendi, potentially. There's a few players around the league. It's kind of hard to tell now because they're likely not going to be able to add an outfield bat for a couple of months just because teams aren't going to want to trade guys right now. The season just started. We brought it up before the season. We started breaking down this team. We said, hey, at least this is what I said. And I think everyone overall, Isaac and Chase, were maybe not exactly on board with what I'm about to say, but they definitely felt similar to me. My thought was, this is a team with a top 5 starting rotation and a top 5 pitching staff. Now, the bullpen has been bad. I think they're going to improve. But the rotation has been really good. So we've seen them get carried by their pitching. The other thing I brought up is that their offense is going to basically come from Manny, Tatis, I was hoping Crone. Cronenworth has struggled, but Ben Hosmer has been good. But one of the things I brought up is that I said this might be the worst outfield in baseball. And it might be the worst outfield in baseball. I think people are starting to kind of get on board with that. So I think that they're going to have to add a bat. Luckily, you know, I think there's a few teams that I don't expect to be any good. And I think that they will end up moving some of these outfield bats. So, like a guy like Benintendi, like, you don't have to trade that much to go get him. And he's going to drastically improve your team. So maybe we even see him trade for a couple guys. But it's tough to tell right now who's exactly going to be on the market. But that's what I'm expecting their offense to come from. And, of course, Fernando Tatis returning.
And assuming he stays injury-free the rest of the season. You know, with Tatis. No shoulder problems, no more broken wrist, no more motorcycles. None of that. We'll have none of that, Tatis. But, yeah, I agree with you. They're going to have to do something in the offseason, in before the trade deadline, in fact. Something that makes the outfield look a little bit better. And, yeah, I think it is one of the worst outfields in baseball right now. You know, especially when you look at their numbers and the offense. Ooh, the guys got quiet.
Do I still have him?
You got me. I was letting Isaac answer that one. I think Isaac might be cutting out a little bit.
Okay.
Hello?
Oh, there you are, Isaac.
Cool. You can hear me better now?
Yeah. It's funny that your phone is cutting out like that. You'd think you were the one that was long distance in New York instead of right here in San Diego.
Yeah, no. And you look at from front down like their top 6-7 in front, but then you look at batting average, they're very high. So I mean, right now, like I said earlier, they're just playing small, getting guys on base and hitting them in.
My other thing has been consistently with the Padres, maybe not in the last couple of years, but years before, is their struggle to get runners in scoring position home. That just, if there's anything that makes me really pissed off and want to come on here and scream and yell, it's, you know, seeing the opportunities we get to score and how, you know, they just can't manage to do it. Now, like I said, they're doing better, much better. Much better this year, much better last year. But the past teams, you know, with Andy Green, that dumb bastard, then Tingler, you know, it just frustrates the piss out of me. What do you guys think about this problem with runners in scoring position? And what the players are doing wrong?
I think it's a lot of their. I honestly think it's a lot of their approaches, which is it's just tough because I don't think this is a very good team from a hitting standpoint, and they generate runs because they get on base and they occasionally have like really big innings, and you know they'll have a couple big hits with runners in scoring position when the heart of the order comes up. We actually. Last weekend against the Braves, we actually did see the bottom of the order come through a few times, which is awesome to see. But their approaches are trying to get high pitch counts, trying to walk, and taking a lot of strikes. So when you have guys in scoring position and you have a Trent Grisham or Will Myers come up with, let's say, a guy on third with one out, and then we see one of those guys take a fastball down the middle, it gets a little bit frustrating. So I think that's where a lot of the struggles come from, just the way that their approach is. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that that's how their approach is, because this is a team that's generated, it's a top 10 run-generating offense. And I think when you look at it, I'm guessing when you look at it from an average standpoint, from an OPS standpoint, it's near the bottom of the league. It's got to be close to the bottom five. So the fact that they've been able to generate so many runs is great, but you look at the slash lines and they're awful, outside of the fact that they're walking. But then at the same time, they're walking, they're getting a bunch of guys in scoring position, and they're not necessarily hitting very well in those spots. But, I mean, it's generating wins. I think that this is a team that's really going to rely on the bottom of the order to get on base, and then have Fernando and Manny really carry the offense at wherever they end up hitting. But I think that's where a lot of the offense is going to come from down the road. But it is tough right now, just seeing how many guys get left on and how many times guys get struck out looking. I think that's the part that gets really frustrating for everyone watching.
Oh, yeah. Here comes one right down the middle, perfect to hit. And they stand there looking at the goddamn ball going by. Oh, that annoys me. You know what else annoys me? And it did with Andy Green especially, because that dumb bastard would do it all the time. He would change the lineup almost daily, just kept fiddling and fiddling with it. And I'm noticing now with the interim manager that they're kind of doing that as well. Grisham was batting last today, Kim was batting second, Cronenworth leading off, just messing around with the positions that they're in. And I'm from the school that says, yeah, a lineup should be regular for the guys, so they get used to their roles. You know, you're batting leadoff. There's certain things you need to do if you're batting leadoff. You need to walk. You need to find some way to get on base. You don't need to hit a home run. You just need to get on base. And then the second batter and the third, and of course we know the fourth is cleanup. What do you guys think about shuffling the lineups around every day? Do you think that's good for the players, or what do you think?
Hello?
Oh, you're not coming through, Isaac. Matt, you want to try this one?
Yeah. So, I'm sorry, what was the final part of the question about the shuffling of the lineup?
Yeah, doing it like daily or whatever, like Andy Green used to do.
Yeah, I don't think, that would get really frustrating because guys would be hitting. I think the example that I've always used is Tommy Pham, he would hit leadoff, and he would actually produce pretty solid from the leadoff spot. He'd walk a lot, he'd get on base a lot, and then they would go, oh, you know what, we're going to stop doing that. We're just going to move him to fifth in the lineup, where he was statistically the worst player in the league last year with guys on. And he was hitting fifth after Fernando Tatis and Manny Machado. So that was incredibly aggravating, where guys were just hitting in the wrong spot. But like you said, on top of that, guys were bouncing around and hitting in different spots in the order every single day, whether it be flipping from the 2 to the 3 hole or the 6 to the 8 hole or the 9 to the 1 or whatever it was, just all over the place. I think what we've seen with Bob Melvin is there are some minor adjustments. The guys are typically hitting in a similar spot, if not like one spot away. But they're usually hitting in the same spot in order. And when they decide to move someone, like just recently they've decided they want to move Kim to second in the lineup, they've rocked with it for quite a few games. They flirted with moving Profar to DH, and they tried it for a while, and they basically were like, okay, this isn't a good idea, and they moved on from it. But they still tried it for a while. It was still consistent for a week plus, and then they ultimately changed after a while. But I like the approach of actually letting guys settle in their spot in the lineup instead of just making changes all the time.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really like about Bob Melvin. Lots of stuff I like about the guy. And by the way, I also wish him a speedy recovery from his prostate surgery. I'm sure that surgery was a pain in the ass. Bump.
Yeah, that it sounds like everything went well, and he's going to be back soon and healthy. So that's definitely good news.
All right, we're about out of time now, and I just want to say thank you to you and to Isaac for coming on. We'll do it again and spend another 45 minutes talking about the Padres and hopefully good things happening with the Padres and nothing disappointing.
All right, well, thank you so much, Phil. I had a lot of fun coming on. I think Isaac's cutting out, but I know he's had a fun time too, so it's awesome talking some baseball with you. Really appreciate it.
Oh, appreciate what you guys do too with it. Friar Talk. Write it down. Find it. You can find on their Twitter page. They've got their link tree, and you can find them on YouTube if you want to see what they look like during the podcast. You also can find it on Spotify as well, if you just want to hear the podcast and you're on the go listening on your phone. All right, thanks, guys. And there they go. And coincidentally now, there's a spider crawling across my monitor here. So I've got Oingo Boingo songs queued up here, and it looks like there's one called Spider. So why don't we try that as we leave the program today? Thanks for listening. Keep safe, and by all means, watch your back.